Hello and welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 21. It's me, Rafe Blanford.
And me, Ewan Spence.
And we're here to talk about what's been going on in the Symbian S60 and UIQ world this week. And first up, I believe, are Nokia Q1 results. And you've been looking at these, haven't you, Ewan?
Yeah, I mean, across the board, it really depends on how you want to portray them, as with all good news stories. Nokia's net profit is 25% up in Q1 2008 compared to Q1 2007 last year, from 979 million to 1.2 billion euros.
Lots of money, in other words.
Lots of money, which is a good thing. Or is it a bad thing? Because they're projecting to get over 40 and hoping to get 42% change, which would take them. So they've earned less money than they thought they were going to earn. And strangely enough, markets don't like that. We've made money, just not as fast. Actually devalues the company, which saw Nokia actually take a little bit of a hit on the stock markets when these figures were announced.
So I understand it was about a 10% dip. I think that was also in response to the fact they thought overall sales in euros terms were going to be down in the next year. Is that right?
Yeah, and coupled, of course, with they've already seen a drop in their US numbers as well. So it's a case of, you know, there are more phones going out, but the phones that are going out are giving them less profit, which is, you know, it's kind of something to be expected, given that we're talking that the majority of their value in things like smartphones is going to depreciate over time with commoditization. You're going to sell more, but you're going to have less of a margin.
And of course, at this stage, it's a lot of their low-end handsets for the emerging markets, which have relatively small profit margins. Although Nokia have, of course, sustained that better than some of their competitors.
Yeah, I mean, they're up 27% year-on-year for device volume, 115.5 million units going out there.
Absolutely, and in terms of the sort of smartphone world, I think that's gone up as well, and that's up 24%, I think I'm right in saying, and there's 14.6 million converged devices sold in the quarter. That's Nokia speak for S60 phones, basically. And of those, 10 million at N series and 2 million at E series, which, if you do the math, means there's about 2.6 million S60 devices from the sort of mobile phone devices. Those are the ones that are just made up of numbers. Of course, they've slowed down a little bit since that was the 6120 and the 6110 from last year, which are now, of course, a year old. We've had a whole bunch of them again at MWC, so I'd expect that to pick up a bit. But, I mean, overall, would you say it's been pretty good news for Nokia, and it's sort of a fairly typical stock market response?
I don't think it's very, very good news for Nokia. I think it's fairly good. I mean, they've solidified the position in Europe and Asia. And America, specifically, North America's a continent, America,
still making
country,
no progress there.
They're making less progress. They're going backwards. They haven't embraced CDMA, which drops numbers. They haven't got a foothold in the smartphone market. Their revenue is down in the US. So it really it's highlighted a problem, which is that the market that has the most money, arguably, which is America, isn't a space for Nokia. So the financial markets have a typical reaction. There's this great big space you should be expanding into, and you're not. You're shrinking. We don't like you anymore.
Of course, that could be said to be a bit short-termism. Certainly in terms of smartphones, that's likely to take a while. And I think Nokia are making steps in the right direction, but at the end of the day, unless the operators get involved, there's precious little they can do. And a lot of Nokia's strategy is not liked by the US operators, because they regard themselves as owning the operator and owning the user experience. So Nokia's efforts in that area perhaps not appreciated. And of course, the research lab, or the design lab, that is in the States and is designed to produce CDMA phones, is really only just getting on stream. We saw some of the first of them come out at CTIA. So it'll be interesting to see whether that picks up in the future. But yeah, certainly short term, there's a lot of work to be done in the States, and it's perhaps not picking up as quickly as people expected it to.
And as a public limited company, Nokia really do have to have one eye on short-termism. These quarterly results, you know, they need to be showing profit to their shareholders. That's what they exist for. You know, that's what a public company does. So they have to take on a certain amount of short-termism. Which is why when you look at something like the OV strategy, that's very long-term, that's very market-changing, it's seen, certainly in the financial markets, as a risk, because it will have an impact on those short-term profits over the next 2 to 3 years.
Absolutely. You know, there's always this contradiction between long-term R&D and strategy, which ultimately is about the long-term growth of the company and the sort of short-term approach. But I think that's probably enough on the... all the figures, unless you've got a final comment on it, Ewan?
No. It's going to be interesting to see Motorola's, Sony Ericsson's are due along as well. It's always nice to pick over these and spot trends. I think we're seeing a general slowdown just in the world's global economy, and it's coming through. People aren't buying as many status items, and the one that they are slightly cheaper, but slightly shinier.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how far that's maintained over the year. I mean, I'm sort of of the opinion that mobile is probably likes to be one of the areas least affected by a global slowdown, simply because it's moving so quickly. But I would agree that I suspect the growth may well slow down in the next year.
Now, one of the things you mentioned there was operators and networks, and although some of them are rather, you know, closed shop, I understand that some of them are very good at talking to developers, specifically Orange's CodeCamp, which you were at.
That's right. I was at the Orange Partner Camp that this year was held in Portugal, with a sort of theme of navigation, as that's where a lot of the Portuguese navigators set off from. And actually, it wasn't navigation in the location sense, it was navigating around an increasingly complex ecosystem within the Orange world. But I should explain, the Orange Partner Camp is basically Orange's opportunity to outreach to its partners, and that's both developers, in the sense that we think of them third-party developers, but also in terms of services and indeed hardware products as well. There's a large range of people there, and what most people don't necessarily realise, especially if they're UK-based, is Orange is far more than just a mobile operator, and we'll come on to that in a minute. But this partner camp has an opportunity for Orange to announce some news of relevance to developers. It's a chance for developers to get together and talk and hear about the latest Orange offerings. And there's also a number of sponsors, and included amongst these are Symbian, UIQ, Nokia. There are also people from Sony Ericsson and Motorola there. So it's a pretty unusual opportunity to get all the people at one event. And it's a slightly more informal style of conference. It's held within a resort, and it's certainly a more casual approach than some of the conferences where you end up falling asleep in the back row. While, of course, there is plenty of work going on, they certainly know how to organise a party in the evening. And if you're a developer or a service provider listening to this and wondering how you can partner with the operators, the Partner Camp is without a doubt the best opportunity I've come across in terms of ease of getting access to Orange people to be able to pitch your service. They have various things like speed dating for service providers and developers, and innovation contests. And if you want to try and catch an operator's eye, especially one who's a bit more forward-looking than some of the others that are around, I can certainly recommend it. And Partner Camp's held twice a year. There'll be another one October time, and that's going to be held in the States. And there'll be, of course, the next European one about this time next year.
So I suppose the big question, let's start with that big question, which is, we've already briefly touched there on Nokia's OV when we were talking about their Q1 figures. That is something that initially everybody thought the carriers aren't going to like that. Nokia running their own social network, their own services, appearing to cut the carrier out. I mean, was there any sort of discussion about these new services there, given that you had Orange and Nokia and the other handset manufacturers in residence?
Sure, there was. One thing, before we go into that, if I may, I just want to talk about some of the background to Orange as an operator. And certainly there was talk about that kind of service strategy. And indeed, Orange would be one of the most vocal in sort of not being terribly keen to take OV on board in terms of Nokia services. You may notice that the sort of the N95 8GB and some of the other N-series handsets have been less than fully endorsed by Orange in terms of taking them on board. I think the N81 is another one of these devices where, you know, in some cases Orange has taken them, but not necessarily as a signature device. And signature devices are for Orange are the sort of the key devices. And certainly their concentration has been, I think it would be fair to say, elsewhere. They were particularly against the music store, for example. But Orange, people in the UK will mainly think of it as just an operator, although the more observant will realise that it's also a broadband provider as well. And what Orange is it has a triple or a quad play strategy, and what that refers to is it provides your mobile phone service, your landline service, your internet connection, and in some cases it will also provide a television connection. Now, this is most clearly seen in France. Orange also is part of the France Telecom Group, which is roughly the equivalent of BT in France, and therefore provides a very strong quad play strategy there, and that you can get your mobile phone, your landline, your internet connection and IPTV from Orange. And what this does in quad play, aside from providing a simpler user experience, you sign up to one thing and get four different products, it also allows them to do a lot of converged service strategy. So what I think about here is, in terms of IPTV, they'll have a TV show via their, you know, via the internet IPTV. They'll also have sort of webisodes or that are shown on the web, or mobisodes which are shown on the mobile. So there's a very joined up approach to doing this kind of strategy, and that also extends through some of the other things in terms of games from some of their hardware that they provide for the home. For example, one of the things they were showing off at Orange Partner Camp was their Live Box, which is basically a bit like the BT Home Hub, but they've gone beyond that and started providing other devices. So there's a live radio, which is basically a bit of hardware that takes internet radio streams and puts them into a very radio-like experience in terms of having dials you can turn and stations you can tune into. And for most people, they won't necessarily realise they're listening to an internet radio stream. Similarly, they have Wi-Fi picture frames, which you can control from the website or from your mobile phone. And this is what I mean by kind of the joined up approach. And what's interesting here, and getting back to your question about the Ovi, is this is a very much a kind of a service-led approach, as in services that are provided as a product, rather than Nokia's approach, which is sort of device-led and providing services on top of that. And clearly there's some kind of friction between these two approaches. And really, if you're looking at this in terms of future of software and services on mobile, you have to see it as a four-way competition, really, between operators like Orange and between device manufacturers like Nokia. Sony Ericsson, I'm sure, will be doing similar things. Indeed, they already are, as are Motorola, perhaps not as developed as Ovi. And then you can see a third player in the sort of the internet giants, and this is the likes of Google, maybe to a lesser extent some of the other names out there. And then you can also see a fourth player in the form of Microsoft, which is very strong in the PC space and is looking to develop in mobile and in internet. And all four of those are competing in terms of they want to be the one at the top of the pile when it comes to next generation of software and services. And a lot of the thinking is being mobile-led. And we've talked in the past about why that is. But it's easy to forget there are plenty of other avenues as well, and you know, the web is one of them, but there's also home entertainment in terms of something like Microsoft's Xbox strategy or Orange's IPTV. So you can see, when we look at it at this broad overview level, it's actually quite a complex picture. But perhaps I should go into a bit of detail about Ovi in particular. And yes, it was talked about by the delegates. Orange, perhaps not surprisingly, didn't talk about this so much. You know, it's more about talking up their own services. But they do have a music strategy, and they have a very similar music product to Nokia in many ways. You know, you can download it both to a PC and from the mobile. It's a similar cost base, and they've tied it in with their, you know, ISP offering as well. So it comes out, in fact, probably as a more rounded approach than Nokia's. The problem Orange may have is, do people want to buy their music from their mobile operator or from their ISP? And, you know, it's the same difficulty that Nokia faces. You know, do you really want to buy your music from your phone manufacturer, or do you want to buy it from an independent source? And of course, there's the questions of DRM. Orange is still in favour, still using DRM, but they say, like everybody else, its time is limited. They also have their own Web 2.0 services. Piqio is a bit like Flickr, probably more of a Ovi share Flickr, somewhere in between those two. And they have a WebTop, which is basically a desktop done on a website, a bit like PageFlakes and NetVibes, and that's called Web, BubbleTop.com. They also have a sort of a music social music site called SoundTribes.com. So you can see they've got a lot of fingers in a lot of pies, and this is because they fundamentally believe that, you know, an open approach makes sense, and they have to sort of mould all these together into the ultimate experience. And Orange's take on this is that they are very well positioned to do this because they own the relationship with the customer, and they're a trusted brand, and therefore for the mass market they're an ideal go-to-market sort of lead brand, if you like. And clearly it's not necessarily going to appeal to edge users, many of whom are the type listening to this podcast, but for the mass market it is quite a compelling offering. If you think of your non-techie relatives being able to buy everything from one provider and get everything packaged up nicely for them, you know, there's a lot to be recommended for that approach. Much as we've said, you know, that's Nokia's strength in being able to offer everything from a device provider perspective. You know, each of these does have its own strength. So I mean, that's a very long answer to your question, but hopefully that gives you some insight, Ewan.
Yeah, and I'm also looking at the fact that in the last 2-3 weeks you've been at Vegas and Portugal. All I get is the Midwest Texan desert and some little hole at the bottom of Silicon Valley. How come you get all the good holidays? Sorry, how come you get all the good work assignments?
That's because I'm working incredibly hard. And you know, I don't go on holiday at all. So, yes, isn't it typical you to go off subject and complain about that? But then you do live in Scotland, so you've got some advantages.
Yes.
I should probably mention some of the Orange announcements that came out of the
They had stuff with eBay, for example, I seem to recall.
That's right. And actually, this is interesting because it's one of the first times that Orange have agreed to put a third-party brand on their phones as an actual icon rather than having it branded as an Orange service, and really for obvious reasons with eBay. But I think it does point the way that Orange are accepting of the fact that you know, it's not purely an Orange approach. You can't just have Orange Music, Orange Max, etc. You are going to have to allow others on, much as Nokia said with their Ovi approach, that, you know, they're perfectly open to having other people's services displayed on the phone. And indeed, that's at the very heart of what Ovi is about. And in some ways, I think that's probably Nokia's biggest strength. It's going to take them a long time to get there, and at the moment you really only see the Nokia services apart from some of the connections into to media hosting and that kind of thing. You know, significant in the longer term, but also, you know, putting an eBay icon on the phone may sound a bit boring, but you know, there's a built-in revenue stream there, and so I think you'll see that coming onto the Orange phones in the next 6 months or so, and it's going to be part of their signature phones. And talking of their signature phones, they announced, or rather talked in more detail about something they announced at MWC in February, and that's the Orange Signature Acceleration Program. And basically this is a way of taking software platforms, and at the moment that's S60, Windows Mobile and ALP from Access, and putting a sort of Orange-ized version or an operator pack on top of those software platforms to reduce the amount of time it takes them to customize devices. And not only does it enable them to give a sort of more Orange experience, as they put it, it reduces the cost of doing so and the time to market, and obviously takes advantage of the fact it's a software platform that you can basically take the same stuff you've done for one phone and put it on another phone. Before, each time they would customize a phone individually, but obviously if it's running S60, they can do a standard pack which they can put on the top, and that drastically reduces the, sort of the testing and development time, and has a reduction on costs and, as I say, time to market. And they were talking about how the benefits of this would play, and particularly with S60, they were talking about how, yes, it works for Nokia handsets, obviously, but Nokia more experienced, but it also works for other S60 manufacturers. And of course here they were talking about Samsung, and so Samsung will be able to take the Orange S60 pack, put it on their phones, and immediately have a phone that's much more likely to get through Orange testing and get through all their requirements. They have quite strict requirements in terms of what they want for their phones. And you'll have the Orange version, that things like the Orange home screen, but also the Orange music icon, you know, the photography icon as well, which they have for their Orange photograph, Orange photo service. So it's actually pretty compelling in terms of why S60 has done so well with operators, is because it's enabled that kind of approach, which dramatically reduces costs. And certainly for the mid-tier, that's, you know, very significant, and really has been the secret to S60's growth in the last year or so, in terms of being able to charge down into the mid-tier, and will, I think, only lead to more device volumes in the future. the sort of third big Orange announcement I want to mention, which I think is in some ways the most significant because it truly underlines Orange's commitment to becoming a service provider, and that's the APIs they announced. And these are basically ways to interact with Orange services or databases or customers in ways that third parties can then include in their programs, applications, and or services. And at the moment they're in the alpha stage, but what we're seeing here is Orange becoming a service provider, not with the Orange label on front, but basically providing a back end for other people to access information about their customers and some of the sort of services they provide in terms of being able to send messages. And they fall into four broad groups. The first of which is sort of advanced communication, and this allows you to do things like send out SMSs and email groups in a quite a sophisticated way, set up a multimedia conference using the France Telecom sort of back end to be able to do conferences over the web but also include mobile phones and landlines. It's a bit like the sort of Microsoft Live Meeting approach, if you remember those. And it's creating a way for third parties to be able to add that kind of functionality into their programs very quickly. There's also some device capability enabler APIs. Then the second category of APIs is the instant communication, and this basically allows third parties to send SMS and emails using France Telecom or Orange infrastructure, and that has an obvious implication in terms of the reliability and the level of service that's provided. But at one level, this is as simple as maybe adding a box on your blog that allows you to send have people send an SMS to you, or could be built into an application to allow SMS sending capability. And I should say all these APIs are available through orangepartner.com, and they're free to use at the moment, and Orange are looking for feedback. Perhaps some of the most interesting APIs, though, are the personal APIs. This are things like an authentication, personal calendar, personal contact, personal messages, photos, and personal profile. And these allow you to access information within Orange services about that people have put in there. So the profile is obviously the things like name and address, photos, mainly coming from PKO at the moment, about photos people have stored. The authentication API allows you to use the sort of the Orange identity context, if you like, to use in your application. So the simplest way of explaining this is an e-commerce provider, when you're setting up a new account, could allow you to use your Orange identity to be able to sign in onto that e-commerce website and fill in information about your name and address, so basically making it quicker to sign up to services. In the technical sense, this can be done using OpenID, and basically Orange is becoming an identity provider that other people can then tie into. Now, this sort of is a similar thing that Google and Yahoo and indeed Microsoft are looking to do, but Orange have a pretty compelling thing in their favour. In France, 80% of people have a sort of Orange identity because they either have an Orange mobile phone or they use an Orange ISP for their internet access or have France Telecom stuff. So 80% of one market under a single identity. If you're looking to get into the French market, sort of saying to users you can sign up with one click using your Orange identity is a pretty compelling offering. And certainly if you compare that to some of the other internet giants where it's much more fragmented in terms of who's got what percentage of the market. Orange are starting this in France, but they are looking to spread it to some of their other countries. As you may be aware, they're available in, I think it's about 24 different countries around the world now, and it will certainly start with their European market. So you can look to see this in the UK, for example, relatively shortly. As I say, these APIs allow quite a lot of access, and in terms of operators, it's pretty much unique in terms of what's being offered. But it's also a very open approach, and Orange clearly see a lot of value to being built on the top of this. And how well this will do and how far it will go, of course, does remain open to debate. There are some questions in my mind about how you commercialise this sort of thing successfully. But I think Orange have got absolutely the right idea, and they do need to open it up. They can't afford to be monolithic and walled garden. So it's very encouraging to see them talking like this. More to the point, they actually really genuinely believe in this and think it's the way of the future. And it's all very well to sort of talk about openness, as many of the US operators do, but actually to produce something which clearly indicates that you're going down that path, as these Orange APIs do, I think deserve an awful lot of credit. I should also mention there's some APIs to access their sort of Web 2.0 sites. That's PQO and Babbletop. And one of the things I saw at the Orange Partner Camp that was developed at the Partner Camp was a service that would allow you to move photos between Picasa, that's Google's image service, and PQO, Orange's service. So being able to sync your photos back and forth between them. And that's the sort of thing that APIs enable. And, you know, that kind of... And that was done, as I say, in 2 days. And that kind of functionality is sort of invaluable and shows the benefits of openness. And I was certainly impressed by that approach. So yes, you know, Orange certainly impressed me at the Partner Camp, and we'll have some articles up on the site talking about some of this stuff, you know. And there is a very big debate over who's going to, you know, win in terms of this next generation of software and services, or this converged approach. We've seen the convergence of hardware, we're now seeing the convergence of software and services, and Orange and other operators will undoubtedly be a player. Nokia in their OV strategy will be a player. Google and Microsoft will no doubt be in there. I mean, my personal opinion is that we're probably going to end up seeing a mix of all four, and no one will come out on top. But certainly for the mass market, you know, the other players are going to have to look to answer the fact that Orange does own the last mile. They do own that final relationship with the customer. And in terms of doing things like billing and also awareness of the brand and trusted the trusted nature, that's very strong. At the higher end of the market where we are now, in terms of edge users, that's, you know, less prevailing in terms of how much influence it has. But I do think that will be very important in the mass market. And whether that can be counterbalanced by, for example, you know, everyone having a Google identity is, of course, open to debate. And equally well, you know, Nokia does have a very strong claim in that they are the device manufacturer that has 40% of the market, and a lot of people will own Nokia devices, and so, you know, there's a trusted brand there as well. Orange's weakness is perhaps 170 million customers. There's only so far it can go in terms of growth. And that's why it is looking to do open up a bit more. And the opening goes both ways in terms of opening Orange up and its sort of customers and its data, but it's also looking to bring other customers into it by being this open. Because, of course, if you're, say, a Picasa user, you can sign up to an Orange service, and because of this openness, there's a much easier transition. So I think that's enough talking about that, Ewan. Hopefully I haven't sent you to sleep in the background there.
No, I'm still here. I'm just wondering when you're going to breathe.
I'll start breathing now.
Hey,
and I think that's a good point to go into our next topic. We're rapidly running out of time, but we'll just talk.
Not through my fault.
No, not your fault at all, Ewan. we'll talk briefly about some of the Ngage stuff, because there's been a couple of new things out since we last talked about Ngage on the Insight here. So, Ewan, I believe some of the new games that have come out have been FIFA 2008. Have you had a chance to play with that yet?
Yeah, and FIFA's an interesting one, given that there's a number of countries where Nokia are giving away the full game for free. Which I think there's 13 of the European territories have a certain number of free licenses available. You just literally walk along to play.n-gage.com, download the game, as you would normally do, and you just download the license code after it. My understanding is that there's 20,000 licenses available in the UK, so over 13 territories. That means Nokia is giving away something in the region of 250,000 copies of FIFA 2008. I just think it's a lovely stroke of marketing, this one. The game itself is well respected in the gaming field. FIFA 08 is one of those titles that's on pretty much any platform, which means you can't really go wrong with it. If Nokia was to go wrong with FIFA, then it would be bad for the Ngage. Luckily enough, they haven't. It's a very good implementation. It's probably about the level of a PS1, PS2 conversion. Slightly less than what, say, a Sony PSP could do, which is natural. Nokia have always been pitching these as phones that play games, not gaming devices that happen to have a phone in them as well. I'm not a great fan of football games, but I have played them, and it looks crisp. There's very little stutter, and the graphics are very 3D, very realistic. And when you put this through the TV output on something like the N95, you know, if you'd shown this 4 or 5 years ago, it would have been a high-end Christmas console that you would have got under the tree on December the 25th. And the fact that Nokia are giving it away to anyone who wants it, I think, is smart on all parts.
Absolutely. Of course, it's not free in all markets, so you still have to buy it. I think it's about £8, €10, something like that.
€10, yeah. And so it's a strong discussion.
yeah, it's still pretty competitively priced there, even so. However, as an ex-Engage Classic user, I do have one complaint with this game, and do you know what it is, Ewan?
Let me guess. It's really hard to press keys to go diagonally.
Well, yes, that is one of them. And
okay,
the other
two,
one
complaints,
is
two complaints.
There is one of them. That's, I hadn't actually thought of that one. But the other thing that I'm rather upset about is they've removed a feature from the game that we had in the original Engage version.
Oh, which one's that?
And that's multiplayer over Bluetooth. So although
really?
The likelihood of meeting a fellow Engage Classic player was pretty unlikely, it did happen on occasion, mainly at All About Symbian pub meets, to be completely honest. But as you say, with a lot more copies out there and a lot more phones capable of using it, I think it's a shame that we haven't got Bluetooth multiplayer in this version of the game.
The argument I suspect they'll do is, but you can play over the extranet and you can find the person that you're standing next to, so you can still do a head-to-head.
It's,
but just with a different transmission.
There's no online play either.
Oh, you see, I haven't even started to review it yet, and my face is dropping. Boo!
So are we going to have to redo that section of the podcast?
No, I think we should just leave that in there and see that sometimes we get it wrong. Look, and this is a good point here. Expectations of what gaming and consoles can do is key. Even though Nokia are pitching this as a phone that does games, there is still a certain level of expectation, as both Rafe and I have illustrated there. And this is what I've said. Nokia have got to try and be the underdog here and not have a direct comparison to things like the Nintendos and the PlayStations of this world in the mainstream press. And when they are missing out functions that frankly I expected it to be there before going into the game in depth, oh dear.
Okay, so it doesn't look too good for the FIFA review that Ewan's working on at the moment. The other game that's relatively new to the Engage, I think it was added to the marketplace this week, is the shoot 'em up game whose name has slipped my mind, but I'm sure you
that would
remember.
Be Space Impact Kappa Base.
Absolutely.
It's just getting through now. It's not actually up in the UK yet, but it was available in the alpha build of the end of the Engage client, and it's very strong. It's one of Nokia's own brand titles. This has come all the way through from the Nokia 602s with the 96x72 black and green pixel screens, and it's turning out to be a very, very slick game. And again, it's taking into consideration that it is on a mobile phone, so things like automatic firing can be switched on, so you don't constantly have to mash down on a key. It's still the form factor of a phone just isn't quite suitable there. For all that we complained about the original Engage and Engage QD, they had a good control layout. They had a good direction pad. You could hit diagonals and ups and downs quite easily. The rest of the platform was a little bit lacking, but we put up with it. So what we're getting now is fantastic games, but the actual hardware interface is now just a little bit lacking. Now, some games like System Rush have taken that to great effect and really thought about, you know, you're on a phone, you don't have fast key press responses, what can we do to keep the game interesting? And what System Rush does is it gets rid of things like acceleration and turning corners. You turn more into a sort of gun platform that moves around as your craft is taken down the tunnel. Something like Space Impact Kappa Base still has the fly around and shoot things, and okay, we're not going to have you mashing the button all the time, but in these top-down, you know, shoot 'em up arcade things, there's lots of moving around, diagonals, lefts and rights, moving bullets and such like. And really, the responsiveness of some of the handsets and the ergonomics that lead to the responsiveness in the controls, really, I think, I'd like to see Space Impact Kappa Base 2 and those considerations taken on board and improved, because the game is almost but not quite there.
Yeah, no, I think it's a very important point you're making there, that the games do have to be designed with the sort of the phone controls in mind. And actually, I wouldn't always say this about games, especially elsewhere, but actually I think minimal control systems in terms of button pressing is actually a good thing, because it makes the games more playable on the mobile phones.
And we also have to remember that the programmers and designers are now dealing with multiple phones. So, I mean, you have the N95 with its very big square key. It's actually quite a good, it's the original N95. It's a pretty good controller. The N95 8K gets smaller it's less accurate, strangely enough, and it's quite hard to push in this enter key. And then when you have the new ring style that you have in the N81 and appears to be on the N96 when it comes out as well, that is just useless for playing games on, in my opinion. So there's the... Yes, Nokia are addressing more phones and more devices, the N-Gage platform.
But brings with it its own set of problems.
Yeah, I mean, if a game works... If you have a control system that works brilliantly for a game on an N95, but not on an N81, what do you do? Do you bias towards one or the other devices? Do you go for the lowest common denominator? Do you change the game's design and go right back at the design process again? That is a tough problem. It's not something that designers for any of the other consoles have. All the other the big consoles out there, and even the original N-Gage, this is what they'll be playing it on. You get one device. This is what you're playing on. You get a suitcase.
I agree with you absolutely, which is why, I mean, I think personally the way to go is minimising controls. And actually a good example of this is in FIFA 2008. In terms of running direction, you don't actually have to hold down the controls to run in a particular direction. You just tap the direction pad in the way that you want to run, and it'll keep running that way until you press it in another direction. And so, obviously some thought's gone into that process. And you can actually turn that off if you prefer the style of holding down stuff to be able to run in a certain direction. But I don't think necessarily every game is quite there. And I think it's probably a case of, Nokia has something of a learning experience to go through with these first games, and as do their developers. And it'll be interesting to see how some of the later ones come out. One particular I've got my eye on is the Star Wars game, which uses a fairly unique control mechanism, which I think may be particularly suited to mobile phones. And I think we'll probably be talking more about that in a future podcast, because I'm aware we're running out of time here.
Yeah, I think the one thing to say, just to say something nice about N-Gage, not that we have to say something nice about it, but it's the fact that every game has a demo currently. Now, I know that's not set in stone, and it is actually up to the developers if they want to supply a demo, but everything that's in the store at the moment, you can download a free trial to see if you like it, to see how the control system gets on. And I think that that's not something that's been done by any other platform.
Absolutely.
There are the occasional demos for games on PSP. Nintendo DS doesn't do the demo thing at all. And same with things like Xbox and Xbox Live and PS3. The fact that Nokia is giving everything a free demo, nice.
Yeah, and I also think it's about the accessibility of the demos. I mean, even something like the DS does sort of temporary downloads to do a demo in some stores. And as you say, the PSP does a similar thing, or magazine giveaways in some cases. But to actually have the access to the demo straight from the phone, every title in the same way, I think is particularly compelling. And it's something that often gets overlooked, because that sort of the try and buy model, I think, has been proven successful elsewhere in the software world. And I think this may end up being the thing that just pushes N-Gage over the edge in terms of public consciousness and why people like it. Because some of the demos in particular allow you to have quite a detailed bit of gameplay before you actually have to buy the game. The only thing I would caution Nokia at is to make sure the demos are actually worthwhile. If you've downloaded a multi-megabyte game, you want something that lasts longer than 30 seconds. And yes, I'm talking about you, World Series of Poker.
And Block Breaker.
So there you go. I think that sort of is a good point to stop this week's insight. Thank you very much for coming along, Ewan.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you for coming back on your travels and going, better do something.
Absolutely. And we've got some interesting things coming up in the next few weeks. No doubt there's some Nokia announcement on the 22nd of April. That's going to be around some kind of music service, we believe. And In the conference call from the Nokia Q1 results, OPK said although there aren't going to be any major device launches in the second quarter, and that means in terms of coming out onto the market, he did expect there to be a few announcements, and he even dropped some code names, rather unusually for Nokia. So certainly towards May and June time, we're expecting to see some interesting device announcements, and of course we'll be covering them on the Insight. But until then, thanks for listening.